That's, yes.
Okay, so we're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Thanks everybody for being here. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There's extra chairs over here if anybody wants them, but please don't drag the chairs around.
New floor.
So please leave your chair where they are. We need another one.
So, thanks everybody for coming. The first thing on the agenda is public comment about anything that's coming up on the agenda, but you can't stay for the whole meeting to talk about it. Does anybody have anything like that? If it's not on the agenda, you have to wait till the end of the meeting. Megan, I have comments from two people on various things. Do I read them now, or can we read them when we're talking
about?
The water issues.
Oh, then wait till water.
Okay.
That'll be more relevant.
Yeah, okay. All right, hearing nothing. We'll carry on to approval of minutes from the last meeting, and I had a couple of small comments. Does anybody else have comments on the minute?
No.
Okay, so there's a place that says receive a report for VLM, and it needs to say from. That's number four. Also, Josh Travers, are you here? Josh, you didn't hire a company called Geotech, did you? Right.
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. So that needs to change. It needs to say under, this is the content under item four. It needs to say under geotechnical assessment, not assessment by geotech. Okay, and geotechnical is one word, no capitals. I'm a geotechnical engineer, so we have to get that right. Okay, and then can you please spell out what RAMP means, which is the Recreational Area Management Plan? And that's it. So I would move to approve the minutes with those little changes.
Approve.
Good, okay, that's unanimous. Now, the agenda for today, any big comments on that?
I recommend approval for the agenda.
Everybody good with that? I'm good with that. Okay, that's unanimous. Now I lost my piece of paper. Uh-oh. Here. So now we have informational items, and we start with a report from the water district. And we're going to have also an item on the agenda about water. So we'll hear about water twice. Jordan Bunker.
Hello. Good evening, Jordan Bogner with Las Vegas Mountain Water District. Right now, we just need a quick system update. We'll get into the water rates a bit later, I think. The monthly reading and data collection for the James Harden North and South wells was completed on May 25th, so yesterday. The data gathered indicates that the North well has a static water level of 15.64 feet below land surface, and the South well static water level is land surface. That's a decline of just about 7 inches since last month, and just over 3.5 feet from May of last year. As far as the system operation is concerned, there have been no major leaks or breaks in the past month. The system is in very stable condition. And like I said, I'll wrap up in a few minutes to talk about race, but if there are any questions,
I got the letter about the pipeline that's going to be coming up 160, that it's been delayed until 2022.
Okay, I'm not completely familiar with the project, but it sounds right.
Yeah.
Is that the pipeline going to the new reservoir?
Yes.
No? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, the reservoir has also been pushed off until a later day.
Okay.
Do you know why?
You know what, I apologize, I'm not sure, but yeah, they were coming right up to go to bid and they canceled last minute.
Well, we're not in any hurry, are we?
No.
And 2022 is not as far off as we think.
No,
no, it's true.
Okay, right. Thank you, Jordan. Don't go
Thanks,
anywhere.
Jordan. All right.
Okay, now we're going to receive a report from Metro.
Good evening, I'm Sergeant Pickerell with Vegas Metro. There's no negative to report, which is good. And if anybody has any questions about the
anything positive to report?
No crime.
That is positive. Okay. Cynthia Lippman.
Cynthia Lippman, was it established that it's not the jurisdiction to do enforcement on the highway? Is it not your jurisdiction to do enforcement on the highway? Is that highway patrol?
The way you're talking about the state route?
Yeah.
The way state routes work, so the primary units on state route, highway I-15, 160, the Chevron split, and the 169 or whatever, 161, the primary unit, the primary department that's responsible for those roadways are NHP, okay? How does that incorporate us? That doesn't mean we don't control it. That just means it is not the primary focus of what we do specifically. And someone asked me at a break a couple of weeks ago, the trucks come through on I-60. Believe it or not, there's a lot that's incorporated.
I'm not seeing it.
And there isn't one metro officer that I know in our unit that is certified to do spot checks.
I can try to
remember that. Pull the trucks and then start issuing fines for whether it be their logs, whether it be the tire, so on and so forth. All those experts are within HP or are autonomous. So that people think, well, it's a state highway, we can't do anything because we're county. That's not true. We can do enforcement. I can go out there and blow over 100 people. But that's not just the primary force. Just like if you guys would have, let's say it's in this area, or let's say it's a domestic violence, and NHP is not showing up here. We're kind of accelerating.
Sure.
Would I love to be certified and inspecting trucks, especially out here?
Should we just defer it to Josh?
So that's what my question, because it doesn't seem like there's been any abatement of the big trucks coming through 159. So would that be highway patrol then in White House?
They have what's called a commercial division.
Right.
They specifically deal specifically with that.
Okay.
And when it comes to the 159 or 160, the commercial division, they focus strictly and specifically on that.
Okay. Right.
And that's where they come.
And I've been talking to the sergeant that is handling that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been one problem after another, and it looks like he's not going to make it tonight. He's on the agenda. We're going to get him here. He has been working on that exact issue.
Okay.
And has a lot of good information to share. So praying for him to get this.
Just let me know, HP's come out with their commercial unit in the last month and a half.
Yeah, they've been working on it for the past several months.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so I've seen
them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else for law enforcement? Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. So next is an update on the Red Rock Bike Trail. Usually Sheila Billingsley does that, and she's not here. So, Josh, can you talk to us about it?
Yeah, I can probably do that when I give Leo an update.
Okay, and that's the next item. So let's combine them.
I knew as soon as I rolled these maps that I'm never going to be able to unroll them. I'll try and do my best. First, I wanted to give an update on the Calico Basin Recreation Area Management Plan. And if you're not familiar with that, it's a project that's a step-down management plan from our resource management plan, which is a very high-level plan for the entire National Conservation Area. The Recreation Area Management Plan is a step-down approach to putting Calico Basin, the recreation program that surrounds Calico Basin, under the microscope, and we're developing on-the-ground direction and setting very specific goals for how we're going to manage recreation in that area. And just to familiarize you all with the planning area, thank you. We'll let those go. Thank you. So the planning area, which is going to be hard to see from the distance, but I'll outline. So here's Calico Basin. Oh, it's up.
Thank you.
Sorry. So here's Calico Basin. This blue line here outlines the entire planning area. It's just over 5,000 acres. And a lot of recreation happens there. In fact, we have counts of anywhere from 750,000 to 800,000 visitors that recreate in this area now, and that number is growing. And so this management plan is going to set
the number of visitors in what area?
In 2019 we had 750,000. In 2020 we project it was anywhere from 750 to 800,000. And Red Rock Canyon is currently seeing anywhere from 28 to 33% growth in recreation visitation year over year. In fact, we're expecting for the entire NCA, we're currently at 3.5 million visitors a year. We expect to break 4 million in 2022 and 5 million in 2024. And so these management plans that we're developing are to develop on the ground focus and provide direction for how we're going to manage the volume today, but also setting us up so that we can best manage recreation in the future as visitation continues to increase. And so we did, many of you participated in information seeking meetings that we held earlier this year, and we've compiled all that information, and we're spending a lot of time right now talking about all of the stuff that came out of the public comment area, but also just going from recreation activity by recreation activity and all the stuff and challenges that we know exist in Calico Basin, and bringing that into this management plan and starting to really develop direction for how we're going to manage this stuff. When I presented this at the beginning of the process before the public meetings, we were projecting an end date of July to have a draft plan ready to present to the public. Because of the complexities and a lot of the challenges that came up in our public information meetings, and then we're working very closely with the county on not only managing recreation within Red Rock Canyon, but addressing a lot of the challenges that exist outside of Red Rock County. Red Rock Canyon's border and a lot of the issues that happen within Calico Basin. We're working very closely with the county on how we can best manage that. And so we have to ask for an extension in our contract of the company that's helping us in leading this management plan effort. And we're looking at a proposed date of September to get that complete, just to really support all the work that we're putting into this plan and to get a really good develop. So that's the update on that. Any questions? I explained it well.
Josh, I was reading in the newspaper a letter from Heather Fisher, say Red Rock, and it, she was talking about the Catherine Cortez Masto bill, where it would add, if I have the number right, 50,000 acres to Red Rock. The National Conservation Area. Is that one contiguous area, or is that all over the place?
No, it's three areas.
Okay.
Three focal areas that would add a total of 50,000 acres.
Okay.
I happen to know that one of those areas is the Valley West Disposal Area. We might finally get rid of that.
Oh, good. We might get rid of what?
The Valley West Disposal Area up on surrounding Gypsum Resources property on the Gypsum Line.
And then we have the Legacy Trail, and many of you are familiar with that, but if you're not, it's approximately a 30-mile trail network that's going to start in Summerlin and parallel 159 all the way around and back into South Las Vegas. It's going to be an asphalt trail that's going to be 10 foot wide, 1 foot shoulders, and it's to provide a safer access for recreation on the side of Highway 159. We know that we won't remove all recreation from the highway, but it's providing an incredible access route for people to non-motorized use to come through Red Rock Canyon and visit by bicycle, roller skates, skateboards, scooters, strollers, dog walkers, whatever you can put on a non-motorized trail is going to provide for that. We're really excited about this. It is a five, because of funding, it's about a $90 million project. And because of funding, we split it up into five phases. Phase one was funded first. Save Red Rock was able to get a grant and was instrumental in getting an award done that got phase one. So phase one starts in Summerlin and ends at the entrance to the scenic drive right here. That's well on its way in the planning period. We just did an environmental analysis, NEPA. We sent it out to the public. That's going to allow for, it's setting us up so that we can do geotech work to test for the design that's in play right now to make sure that what's being proposed is feasible. Once we get that done and complete, we're gonna start going to planning for construction that will build this segment. And that geotech work is gonna be starting here real soon. And then phase five, on the opposite end, is blue down here, which is, kicked off the planning for this section of the trail. And Federal Highways is also leading, this effort and this effort. And this is all getting planned for now. This will also have a complimentary trail that will be open for equestrian use. We want to make sure, we're addressing all this non-motorized use, but we want to make sure that we include equestrian recreation in the planning for this. And so there will be a large section of this that will have a paralleling trail to the trail that will provide equestrian recreation opportunities.
Is it going to be like parking for the horse trailers and stuff?
Yeah. And for all of this, a huge part of the conversation is, we're going to be looking at all of our trailheads on 159. All those trailheads, we're going to be looking at redesign and construction that will improve the access and into the parking lot and out of the parking lot back onto State Route 159. Right now, it's just a dirt area. People are just pulling on and off the highway. It creates a really dangerous situation. In this project, for both these phases, we're addressing the trailheads that complement these areas, and we're going to be putting designs together that's going to bring in paved parking lots, restrooms, and other facilities to support recreation on this trail. BLM, we put a project together. We asked for $63 million through SNPMA to fund the planning, design, and construction of a paralleling trail that's on the south side of the highway, and then all the way around to meet where the planning and design is done for phase five. We were just informed that we took first out of all federal agencies, and it was recommended to the secretary to sign, and to give other projects funding. We knocked it down to $34 million, so we're going to plan and design the entire trail. So it's all getting planned and designed, and then we're gonna construct from here. So this gets constructed in phase one. This is gonna get constructed in the phase that's going on right now. And then we're gonna plan and design all this and then construct from here all the way around to a small section here that will be planned for, but we just have to get the funding to build that last section of the trail. And we expect to get that funding in another project. So it's about a $90 million project, and it's 95% funded. So we're really excited about that. I did promise Federal Highways to ask a question at this meeting and what we're doing. This is a phase five blown up. So it's, make sure I'm holding it up right for you. So here's Blue Diamond, and then phase five is gonna come in from this side of Blue Diamond, and then it comes in. Phase five was projecting, it ends here, but we're going to plan it all the way to Blue Diamond and to the other side, just because it doesn't make sense to end it here and to not end it here in our planning. The question is we're trying to develop alternatives. So because whenever we put out a proposal to the public and say, what do you think about this possible design, we want your input, but we also want to present to the public alternatives for the project to make it a really viable project. And so the question that's come up is, when we come into Blue Diamond, we can hit Arroyo Road, and we could have a trailhead there that would provide parking, and a trail could end there, and we could allow people using the trail to come through Blue Diamond. Or there's what was originally planned is that we would skirt around and stay within the NDOT right-of-way right up next to the highway. And so, I mean, there's benefits of both. If we kept it right next to the highway, it keeps it a continuous trail. And I think a lot of people would say that makes a lot of sense, but I also think that people would appreciate an opportunity if it did end here, and then they would come through Blue Diamond. There's economic value for Blue Diamond here, and I just want to make sure, the question is, would you want to see that in Blue Diamond? Would you want traffic to come through it, or would you want us to skirt around?
I think that's a good question that should have a lot of, that we should have lots of opportunity to think about.
Yeah. No, I'm starting the conversation here.
Yeah.
What's the plan for how the trail will deal with Calico Basin Road?
Calico Basin Road? It's going to cross near the highway and end on right away.
And it'll be a surface crossing?
Yeah.
Right, so is there going to be some kind of traffic control for it?
For crossing?
Yeah. I wonder about people blinding. Crossing the road and then people driving over the road, et cetera, how much risk is associated with that?
We're very early in the design, all the way to like what the signage is going to look like. But anywhere where we have a trail that crosses, like on a scenic drive, when we have a trail that crosses the road, there is warning signs that say, they give drivers advance notice that there's a trail ahead and to slow down and to use caution. A minimum at that intersection.
What about the people using the trail? Do they have signage too?
There could be. Yeah. And this is all, that's going to go to the public. So we've only gone to geotest, or just the testing to make sure the trail design is feasible. We're getting ready to bring to the public a proposed design for that whole space. And so that's an opportunity where you can bring some of those comments into that.
I have another question, which is you're talking about in order to have a continuous trail, having it be closer to the highway. But like there's places where the washes give you a lot of leeway about where to place that trail, but then kind of going towards the 160 from here, there's places where there really isn't any shore. Have you guys addressed that at all yet? I mean, your places where it kind of is a pitch more or less straight down into the street or the wash.
Yeah, I mean, all that is getting engineered. There's Federal Highways is the administrating office of the project. They're the lead, project lead, but they've hired a whole engineering design firm that's looking at the landscape, and we're building in low water crossings. There's places where bridges are going to be needed. Yeah, so there is. I mean, we're looking at all of that. Our goal is to keep this trail accessible. To anyone and everyone that possibly that we can plan a trail like this for, and our goal is to keep it between a 5% and 8% grade, and so it's going to require some serious engineering at crossings just to get us up and down and to keep a grade that keeps the trail accessible.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was Federal Highways that asked for our opinion on. Where to put that path through Blue Diamond. So
Yeah, we're trying to form. We're trying to form a series of alternatives to consider to give to the public. And so one of the conversations that we had was when we hit Blue Diamond, do we want to end and on one end and start on the other end, or do we want to just keep the drill continuous above, or do we want to consider both? And I said I don't want to throw out an alternative without having a conversation.
Yeah. I feel pretty strongly that...
Pauline, speak a little louder.
I'm sorry. I feel pretty strongly that we shouldn't be directing all that traffic through Blue Diamond, and I don't think we should be building a trailhead in Blue Diamond either. I think we already have really tough interface problems, and we're just, like, inviting more. I think from just speaking to people in town, the majority of people would feel the same. I think the goal of the trail should be to move, to create real trailheads. Because right now, Blue Diamond is used as a trailhead, and it's not a trailhead.
Right. And I agree that there's, in my opinion, there's more keeping the trail continuous. There's a lot of benefits with that, and it maintains the purpose of the trail. It maintains safety. It maintains the recreational experience. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that we're addressing. But I wanted to ask the question in case there was a strong opinion that you wanted it to come through the community.
Anybody else have an opinion?
Well, you know what you could do for this evening, just with a show of hands, those that want it to come through, those that don't,
sure.
You get an idea.
Can I see the hands that want to see the trail come through? Want to see the trail come through? Can I see hands that like to see it remain as a continuous trail in that corridor or a town corridor that within the end on our road? Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
I have a question. Earlier you said something about it could be financially beneficial for us, something like that for the diamonds. Do you recall that?
I may mention that there's economic benefit too, because it leads by group. You guys have a restaurant. There's places that these people can stop, and maybe they choose to do that anyway.
Yeah, there will definitely be plenty of users that will want to get off the trail to come to Blue Diamond, so we need to make that possible.
But
that's different from having it run right in front of people's houses.
Thank you. I just wanted to throw that out there, and I appreciate that you guys playing along with me.
I know this is in its infancy, but with the trail, if you're going to have like a couple parking areas, will the rest of the trail have fencing along the side to keep burrows or whatever, to keep everything confined, or it's going to be wide open?
It's going to be open.
It's going to be wide open.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be lifted. There's going to be a small lift because it's similar to the construction of the road where there's an aggregate base, and then it's going to be constructed so when rainfall hits it goes off the trail.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of more concerned about people. You know, it's always mentioned that families, can use it and stuff, that sometimes there's a dog that you think is going to do what you want, and if it's that close to the highway, it's things like that, or a kid that you think you're watching and all of a sudden bolts off, and that's all I was thinking about. Yeah, and that's up to the parent or the guardian to watch, that's up to them to watch it. And the other thing I was confused by was, when you said ends at Blue Diamond, does that mean it continues down to 160, the detention basin?
Sorry, it would end on one side of Blue Diamond and then restart on the other side, and then recreational traffic would fill it.
Okay.
And then so they come down the trail, and then go through Blue Diamond, and then back on.
Okay, yeah, because your end would be my start, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So yeah, the way you said, I just wasn't sure. So good, thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to ask, you said phase 5 has a question, but what about the rest of phase 1, 2, 3, 4?
There's not planned equestrian there. However, it's within the recreation area management plan of Calvert Basin, which historically hasn't had a lot of equestrian.
I'm not doing my job.
We're really planning to ensure that that activity that we still have that there, but enhance that opportunity there as well. So it's we're not going to have the ability to stay equestrian use out of Summerlin up to the city front entryway, but there's going to be opportunity for other equestrian trails. Like at the exit of the scenic drive, we have that large gravel parking lot there. We're planning for another equestrian parallel trail that would parallel the legacy trail. There are already kind of is unofficial, but we're going to make it more official to complement equestrian use there as well. So we're looking as many places as we can have complementary.
Point of order. Silence your phones. Also, I'm supposed to ask you when you're speaking to identify yourself and give your address.
Well, I'm normally good at that. I'm sorry. Yeah. Josh Travers. I'm the assistant coordinator
for the
Rock Canyon.
Sorry. I think the phone is the
BDC. Oh, okay. That's a good reminder. Cynthia Lippman. Up is Megan telling us about what's going on at Clark County.
Okay.
I am going to try to keep it brief because we still have a lot of stuff to go. So one of the questions that has come up recently is about the alleys. And of course, the people that asked about it aren't here, but I'll share the information anyway. And this is probably more relevant for people that live in Blue Diamond. So you'll see on the map there, there's two different kinds of alleys here. And Jason in this county jokingly said, oh, yellow and pink. Well, yes, they're yellow and pink. I just did that to differentiate. Right here. So the yellow one is the one that is between Elastin and Allegro, and you'll see it's got solid lines along both sides of it. That's because it is dedicated. It's public right of way. It doesn't mean it's a road. Doesn't mean you can start driving down there. It just means that it is it's public space. It cannot be blocked off. It needs to be left open. And I know that's one of the concerns that's been happening lately is that some of the construction stuff that's going on, they've been blocking it off. So if you find that happening, please let me know. Or if your neighbors tell you that's happening, please let me know because that cannot be blocked off. It is not specifically maintained because it's not paved. But if there are issues with overgrown trees or things like that, that I can have the public works crews come out and work on that. That one's pretty straightforward. The other one, the pink one, is the one that is between Allegro and Cerrito. It's the houses that face Allegro at the back, and faces the house and face Cerrito at the back of their properties. That is an easement, and you'll see on the last page of your packet with the pink highlighting, about half of the deeds of the properties along there have the wording in it that reserves. And it's the fancy wording, but reserves therefore a right-of-way and easement with the right of egress and ingress for driveway purposes for the construction, operation, maintenance, repair, and renewal of all type and kinds or public utilities over, across, and under the southeasterly 15 feet thereof. This is from one particular house, one particular property, but it's worded essentially the same way for each individual property. I have a feeling, and I have not been able to research this, and but if I think I would encourage the neighbors along there to research this. I'm having a feeling that this language was probably in all the original deeds, and somewhere over the years it's gotten left off, especially because it's kind of an odd wording, but it's not the usual wording for an easement. So I know there's been concerns with property owners along there, with some new property owners that are wanting to block off or gate off their entire property, which would block off access to the alley there. I would love to be able to help, but it's a private matter because these are all on individual private properties. So what I've told people that have emailed me and have come to the meeting and asked me about it, if you want to pursue something with that, I would talk to a land use attorney or a zoning attorney, something like that, to work on those issues, but it's a private matter.
So if you didn't have this on your in your documents and you went and found that it was there five owners ago, do you have any recourse or no?
I don't know, and that's something an attorney would have to tell you. Mm-hmm. But I think even if it's been left off the deed, that would be for an attorney to determine.
Okay.
But there are things called prescriptive easements where if an easement has existed long enough, it becomes an actual easement, but that has to be proved through court. It's a pretty complicated issue, and that's why I urge the people that are reaching out to me maybe to get together and consult an attorney and figure out what the rules are about it. All right, so I hope that answers the questions. It's not a whole lot of information, but that's what I got.
Thank you for taking it as far as you could.
Any questions on that? Okay.
Did you have a question?
Next thing, that was access issues. Public Works, there have been a couple questions about Public Works stuff. One was, is there a variance to allow speed bumps? And that is a no. There are no variances to allow speed bumps. And the other question had been whether the community could put up the signs that like direct away from residential areas or towards the commercial area. And yes, those signs can be put up as long as they are 100% out of the right-of-way on private property. And
there, I guess, the water main break that had happened, or water flood that had happened a while back up above, a bunch of debris had settled in the V ditch on Minder, and Public Works finished cleaning that up today, so that should be all taken care of.
I think you also had them pick up those couches that got left in the Arroyo, is that right?
Yeah.
Great.
So that's all been taken care of, and the status of the waiver that occurred last night, I did not get that looked up. I'm pretty sure it was approved. I think I would have heard if it wasn't, but I didn't get that looked up before. So that's the only thing I don't have. So, any questions for me?
Yeah. Any news on our landfill?
No. Did you actually? Oh, just, do we know anything about what's going on with that landfill? I didn't get an update, and I forgot to ask.
I
know. So I'll have to get an update and figure out where they are in with the studies.
Thanks.
Okay, anything else? Yeah.
That signage that you were talking about, that could be put on. What can a person put something, no parking? Other signs that look like county signs?
It cannot, right.
And I don't know if it's going to happen or not. But
the signage can't purport to be official signage.
Right.
Which has happened in other places, like up in Mount Charles, where people putting up fake stop signs, which is actually quite a hazard. Yeah, it was creating quite a hazardous situation. So no, you cannot mimic actual signage, but it could be. Lots of towns you go to have cute little directional signs and stuff. So directional signage is allowed. Just it can't be official county signs or highway signs.
Okay,
we have several people here today who want to talk about official signs, stop signs and such. There was a request to have that on the agenda?
We had talked about some of those issues before. The stop signs one just came up. So I was hoping Sergeant Pickerell would still be here. I think an emergency happened, so he had to leave. He would be the one to ask about that. I have another town that has asked about additional stop signs, and one thing that anecdotally has happened, when you add more stop signs, people get irritated and speed after they go through the stop sign, so it hasn't even solved the problems. So there's different ways to look at it, but Sergeant Pickerell would be the one to say if he's found that those to be helpful in other situations.
I think in our case they could be helpful, because your speed, as you're going down the hill, your speed just naturally goes faster and faster, and if you have to stop, then I think that it does help.
Well, I'll ask him to, I'll check back with Public Works, and I'll ask him to talk about that next time.
Laura Glissman,
27 Allegro. I wanted to address the alley, the public right-of-way behind Lassen and Allegro.
Uh-huh.
And a year ago, I had a couple of high school boys who dug out a nice little trail. But I like to take other people, too, like to take their dogs down that public right-of-way to stay out the road. When they started building the big house, the Crawfords, they blocked off the bottom with a fence that you can pick up, move, get out, put back, but then they blocked off the top with an orange plastic barricade of some kind. And I actually tried to call Dave, but at the beginning of the week I got through in a text message with him and explained it to him, and he said, "Well, I don't know that that's public right away." And I wrote back, "Yeah, it is, and here's a map you can check. Wouldn't it be great if, could you make it just so we can still use the public right-of-way?" And his answer was, "Talk to my contractor." And when I asked him, "Well, can you give me a name or a number?" I didn't get any response. So I suppose I can just walk over there.
Is this the big house that's being constructed?
Yes.
You know what? They actually called me and said, is it true? And I said, yes, it is true. You need to move your stuff out of the alley. Oh, I'm sorry. They called me and they asked me, they referenced your very polite text message, may I say. And they asked me if it was true, and I said, yes, it is true. It is a right-of-way. Need to move back to the survey stake. And they have a survey stake that shows their corner. And so I would be surprised if they haven't already moved
it. They'll fix it, yeah.
I think they might.
And he said, "You want to keep people from using our dumpster?" And I wrote back and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry if people have used that privilege, but in the past, it's sort of tradition.
Yeah, we've got a couple of sofas we need to put in there."
But, you know, we were probably done.
I think it's probably done.
Thanks. All right.
Well, I can mark that off.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for me?
All right. So next we have a planning and zoning item. It's ZC210197, and we have somebody here to talk about that. Please tell us what you're looking for.
Okay.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Ricardo Restrepo. I live 8620 Fulton Road, and I have 2.5 acres, 2.33 acres, and it is zone H2. 3/4 of it is H2, and H2 is a zoning which allows businesses and residents together. And the other part, about 1/3 of my lot, is rural. H2, horses are not allowed. Not even a chicken is allowed. And I live right here on Blue Diamond. Everybody around me has horses, except me. I have spoken to the zoning department many times, to different planners, and the county has no intentions of allowing any kind of business on H2 along the highway. Mm. So I have an H2. If I were to put a business there, I would not be allowed. And I personally would not want a business in this part of the town. I do not want anything commercial. I don't want a little dinky restaurant there next to my house. I don't want anything like that. And this is not a place for that, in my opinion. And so I'm not allowed to have a business, but I'm not allowed to have any chicken. So who am I? That's one point. And the other point that I learned, and I was very lucky when I bought the property, I applied for a loan with a Federal Navy Credit Union. And when they sent the appraiser, they found out that I'm an H2. And that I could not have a business. So they denied me the loan based on that. So luckily I applied with Wells Fargo, and the appraiser from Wells Fargo never noticed it was an H2. So I got a loan. So if I were to sell the place right now to somebody who needs to get a loan, they cannot get a loan because it's an H2. So I love animals. I don't want no business around me or along the highway. So I would like to change 3/4 of it to rural residential, which is what the county has plans for. That's the plan used for the future.
Thank you. Discussion, questions?
This is something that I had written down last time while we were talking about different things with the transformed Clark County.
Could you speak up a little, Bob?
Last time when we were going through the land use plan, I had written down a couple of things. I didn't realize what the discussion was going to be, but H2 was one of the things that I hope gets addressed in that transformed Clark County.
That's a zoning designation, so not to the Title 30 yet. So okay. That'll be part of that.
Yeah, good. Yeah, because like Ricardo was saying, it puts some difficulties on some of the homeowners.
I've been told by several planners and, of course, Megawatts there. I work with the county, and I deal a lot with the zoning department. And planners are not going to comment themselves. Not even the county commissioner is going to say, we're not going to allow any kind of business that they should do. But the philosophy is no business is going to be allowed. To start with, there is no water. The state will not provide water for a business, will not allow a well, from what I understand, to have a business. And even the state will not allow a septic tank for a business either. So there's no sense in it. And what happens is that for legal reasons, many people bought these lots because there was an H2 and they were going to be money and they were going to go and put business along the highway. Well, with the time, that's not anymore the philosophy. But the county cannot go and tell these people, we're not going to allow you to do that. Mm. They cannot do it.
Yes.
You know? But when people are going to apply for it, they will make hell for them to build any kind of business because there are too many regulations which business will not be allowed to be built.
Yeah, and county planning recommends approval of your request.
Is it premature to just move to approve?
Yeah.
I I move to approve.
Is there anybody have any concerns that they want to bring up?
We're on Highway 160. Is your property? We're on Highway 160. Is your property?
Forty Road.
Okay.
Forty. Forty. Yes. Okay. Road. And right there in front of my lot, there is also a lot, 2.5 acres that belong to the USA, belongs to all of us.
Yeah.
And that's not going to, my property would not be good anywhere for a visit because I'm not right there on the highway anymore.
Right. When I looked it up, I was curious about that as well. Didn't make sense that that would be H2.
Just one quick statement. It looks like the police officer. Back at this point, I agree with the voting for this, but my one question is further up to the west of you, and it may be legal, it may not be legal, but there is the person that has all the cactus there.
The person that has
all the cactus.
The cactus is
around there.
It's because that kind of business is allowed. On H2, they allow nurseries. Mm-hmm. That's one of the businesses. They also allow horse boring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just want to clarify that there are
that
some
the
businesses
kind of
business that are
allowed. They don't allow any other kind of businesses.
Yeah. I don't want it to come out where somebody says, "Well, I heard at this meeting that no businesses." I just want to clarify.
Yeah, nurseries are allowed on H2, and also horse boring. Things like that.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Further discussion.
Recommended approval, Donna?
Michelle Sinangelo, 3 Glen Grove. This is just out of curiosity, not in any way affecting the voting. But so is what I hear is you'd like to have animals on this property. But is that close to Iowa? Are there any safety hazards for the animals on the property?
No, I have about 300 yards away from the highway.
Okay, and there'll be an enclosure.
Oh, it'll be an enclosure. But I'm not planning to have right now horses because I don't have a planning. But in the future, if they would like to have a boat, like to have a boat.
You want its own
property.
Interesting.
Okay, call for a vote. All in favor?
For
here. It's unanimous.
Thank you.
Next, we have general business. We'll receive a report from the Nevada Highway Patrol, but we're not having that. Is that right?
No, he didn't get back to me.
Okay, that's about truck traffic and enforcement on 159,
yeah.
So hopefully we'll be able to do that next week.
I'm going to give him care because he has good stuff to share with you guys.
Okay, and now we bring Jordan Bunker back up to talk to us about water rates. They're raising our rates.
And just before they get started, Metro, you couldn't stay. They had a down power line.
The Nevada Energy people have been here looking like they're getting the power cords.
Right, so that's what he's taking care of. He didn't take that care
of. Okay.
All right, hello again. Jordan Bunker, the Las Vegas Valley Water District, 1001 South Alameda Boulevard. Here this time to talk about water rates. Over the past few months, we've been working with the community to present information as well as solicit input on new water rates for the community. In April, we held 3 community workshops to discuss future capital improvements for the water system as well as various water rate options with the community. In anticipation of tonight's meeting, the CAC asked us to provide some information in advance, which is what these packets are that have been handed out. They were all posted last week. So per the CAC's request, the packet contains on your first page there a scatter plot illustrating Blue Diamond customer water use in both January of 2020 and August of 2020, so a low usage month versus a high usage month in the summer. And then the packet also includes 5 different water rate scenarios that we discussed with the community. The biggest difference between the existing Blue Diamond water rates and the rates that are being proposed is that the new water rates are a tiered rate structure, which incentivizes water conservation, meaning that the more water you use, the more expensive the water gets. If you look at scenarios A and B, those are both 3-tier rate structures. Scenarios C and D are both 4-tier rate structures. And then there's scenario E, which is a 5-tier rate structure, and that was actually that came as a request from the community during one of our workshops. Another piece of community feedback that was incorporated into these new proposed rates was to charge all customers the same service charge, regardless of their meter size. Currently, your service charge varies based on the size of your meter, but all of these scenarios assume the same service charge, regardless of if you have a 5/8, 3/4, or a 1-inch meter. Finally, I do want to point out an error that was inadvertently made in the packet that was posted. What you have right now is correct. You can be able to fix it. Thank you to Marshall for pointing it out to me earlier this afternoon. The water bill impact charts under scenarios B and D, those were incorrect in the information that was posted online. The errors are relatively minor. I think in the chart under scenario B, I think largest discrepancy in one of those sample water bills was under a dollar. And then in scenario D, I think the largest discrepancy was about $1.75. So again, they weren't very major errors, but they were administrative errors nonetheless, and I certainly apologize for those. But what you have in front of you this evening is correct and accurate information. So with that, I would turn the time over back to the committee for discussion.
Can I start by reading the comments that some people gave me? Is that all right? So I just have two comments, one from Mary Hager. Get the reading glasses on. She says, I'm just gonna read verbatim. Water, I would prefer tier one for our new water rate. Tier two would be my second choice. I think this is the best place to start. We are looking to educate and help people in their water usage, not punish them. Also, I am totally against an annual increase tied to the CPI. That takes away control from the citizens and accountability from the PUC and utility. It means higher inflation will cause higher prices irregardless of the cause of the inflation or the user's ability to pay. Inflation does not make us more able to pay the increased rates, but less able to pay them. So that was from Mary Hager. And then we have one from Trent Billingsley, which says, I'd choose scenario A. It seems to have the lowest prices for the greatest number. Speak up so we can all hear you.
It's 5,000 gallons is the first tier, and really hardly anybody is less than 5,000. That's just vacant lots, really. The reason that dots are showing up is houses that are in construction, vacant lots, you know, some.
Well, so my question is, are those tiered limits set by a water district, or is that something that we could adjust the limits per tier?
It's certainly up to the community for discussion.
Right.
And I mean, if you did want to play around with the different thresholds, that's something that we can look at. Obviously, we have to plug those into our financial model to make sure that whatever the suggestion is will meet the system's financial needs.
Yeah.
But I mean, I apologize. This is Matt Corbin. He's one of our managers in our finance department. He deals a lot with the water rates. So
the only thing I want to add was that the 5,000 gallons is sort of the threshold for the typical indoor water use for a single family residence per month. And so if, you know, that's why we've kind of kept that rate, you know, relatively flat, is because, you know, it's sort of the lifeline of water rate, we sometimes call it, because that's why the 5,000 is there.
So it's your baseline recommendation, but not necessarily the exact instruction we would use.
It's on here, but as Jordan mentioned, if the town wants to adjust the threshold,
And then my second question is, as it relates to your costs, is there a major difference between a three-tiered and a four-tiered system? Is that administratively more difficult? How does that affect?
There's not a major impact. All of these tiers, or all of these different scenarios, they all meet the financial needs of the water system. I did mention one of the reasons, this was during the workshop, but one of the reasons for the rate change, the rate increase, is to be able to fund conservation programs throughout the community. So these rates will help provide a pot of money that community members can draw from. We don't know exactly what those programs would look like, but if they wanted to participate in, a landscape remake program, by switching out their grass for more water efficient landscaping, that's something that we're talking about too. So,
when you say phase in over 4 years, what is the mechanics of that phasing something in over 4 years?
Pauline, yeah. You're speaking so quiet.
Really?
Yeah. But I have a hard time hearing. There's fans in here, and she's sitting right next to me, and I can hardly hear her. So please, everybody, speak up.
What is the phase in? The phase in. What does that mean? What are the mechanics of phasing in?
So essentially, there's going to be an increase. We could just increase the rate all at once and have the community take it all at once on January 1, 2022. In the vast majority of the different types of rate processes that we've gone through in the Las Vegas Valley Water District, our customers have preferred phasing those rates in as opposed to taking them all at once, taking it gradually over a 4 year or 5 year period. So it kind of, quote unquote, softens the blow of the rate increase and stuff.
I just
have
one.
Laura Postman,
27 Library, one observation. It seems to be, I know there's multiple causation here, but the five tier one, people who are up there in tier five, they have a little bit more motivation if they feel like they can get down to tier four. But when there's only three tiers, it looks kind of hopeless to the tier three, the people who are on the top. It's like, well, I don't know if I can even try to get that far down because the lid is at 15.0. And having the lid at 35.0, I think, is my 2 cents, would give people a little more motivation to preserve. That's all.
Thank you.
I did some plots and did some calculations, and so one of the things I thought was a good way to kind of sum this up of what we can hang our hats on is percentage of increase in the bills over the 5 years. So from today to 5 years from now, and Jordan gave us three scenarios: a low water user, an average water user, and a high water user. And the high water user is not way up here; it's down here somewhere. And so the percentages showed that the increase over 5 years for the low user ranged from 42% to 48%, depending on which scenario you choose. The average ranged from 53% to 56%. And the high ranged from 72 to 75. So they don't really have a big impact. The one that was saved everybody except the highest users the most money was the one that had the most tiers. The one that, as Laura says, gives the high water users the most incentive to conserve.
And you said that's the one that affords, that has the least impact on most people's bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What
did
you just say,
Paul? It has the least impact on most people. The one that has the most tiers.
The thing is, the scenario E thing, for people who are using up to around 30,000, it kind of their increase stays about the same, right? And it's the people who are really extremely using a lot that suddenly gets. Like, in other words, if you take this 102.24 here and you compare it to the same thing in the lower tier things, it ends up being about the same. It's only the really high users that are affected, and then they're affected kind of dramatically. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, considering the low levels of the wells on a continuing basis.
it might be appropriate to try to, as you pointed out, to discourage them from you know, we want to encourage them to back off of that peak water usage in a way. It seems to make sense.
Yeah, I guess the other thing that's, thank you. The other thing that those percentages tell us is that the people who use the least water are going to have the lowest percent increase in their bill,
right.
which is also appropriate.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the thing...
Increase in the bill.
I think that what you pointed out, Barbara, was about the, whoever's letter that was about the tying to the CPI. I think she made a good point that the problem with the CPI is it's mechanistic. And may not be relevant to a particular thing. And as you may know, the CPI is constantly being manipulated in terms of the basket of goods that are used to calculate the CPI. And it serves political ends, not economic ends. But in terms of that, it's like the CPI, they want to claim it's one thing, but it may work, it's a double-edged sword. It may work either for or against the water district.
What's CPI, please?
The Consumer Price Index. And the Consumer Price Index has changed repeatedly over the last 40 years, where it used to be steak was part of what they called the basket of goods that they base it on, and now it's hamburger. I mean, I'm not being facetious, it actually is. So they just put cheaper and cheaper stuff in the basket of goods, claiming that it's an equivalent. But it keeps the CPI down, so people don't tend to panic about inflation, and the politicians can claim that that they've kept inflation under control.
And just for educational purposes, and then correct me if I'm wrong, we do have a specific CPI scale that we refer to for water projects. Matt probably knows what it's called.
Yeah.
I don't. But what tying it to the CPI does is it helps to avoid any type of significant rate increase in the future, because your rates are already going along with what costs are. And generally what we've done in the past with other rates and other systems is, even though they're tied to CPI, we would install some sort of floor and some sort of ceiling. We would collar those rates. So if CPI were to skyrocket, we wouldn't.
You're saying really you don't use the federal CPI number, you have another number?
No, we use the federal. There's several. There's the Western Cities, there's several. What we are going to plan on using is the one that's more for I guess I would say regular, you know, smaller towns, etc. A different indice than the one that's used for the Las Vegas Valley Water District, you know, that's obviously tied to the larger city. So we would accommodate that. And Jordan's point is exactly right. We, you know, if CPI, as it did in the early 80s, you know, way up, you know, we could do a floor to ceiling so that you wouldn't, you know, if it went up 10%, if you had to collar at 4 or 5 or something, so it wouldn't just skyrocket. That's another option. Again, you know, mentioned earlier about threshold, this type of thing. There are just so many options. We're just
thank you. I was not aware that there were all those variable CPIs for different geographies and population sizes.
So just another thought. This is Michelle St. Angelo, 3 Allegro. Just a counter thought to Lauren's point, which I think, by the way, is brilliant. But the other thing I'm thinking about is, in a 5-tiered system, it may, because the costs would be so spread out and less severe going from tier to tier, it might also have the opposite effect of not encouraging people to switch tiers because it's not that big a deal. Whereas in the 3-tiered system, your rates would have an impact. And you have to keep in mind that even within those tiers, you're still paying for what you take. So, hey, you could within your tier and still conserve and still see a bill increase if you say are just being more mindful of using it. Do you know what I mean? So I think this is just something to consider in the 3-tier versus the 5-tier, how that might affect behavior.
Which one do you prefer? You want us to come back to you?
My initial instinct was that I prefer the five tier as someone because it feels like that would be the least impact on my bill. And I like the idea of, yes, you can see yourself sort of switch tiers. But being the least impact, I might not care at all, right? And so it really depends on what's our goal. Is our goal to incentivize conservation, or is our goal to be the least disruptive to people's current bills?
The question would be, do people look at this and say, ooh, I want to reduce my water bill because I want to be part of the solution, or ooh, it's all about money.
Right.
And that's a matter of character of the people who are involved.
Do we know, not necessarily by name, but who are these really high users, in terms of what is their profile? Why are they using so much?
Well, I can speak to that in depth.
Really?
I need to take my vitamins. maybe that being vegan isn't working out. I'm a bit. Okay, so anyway. So really, honestly, a lot of those people had big leaks, okay?
Big leaks?
Big leaks, and they were not aware of it. The number one water user had a massive leak. He's fixed that. The number three water user had a massive leak. That was fixed. There was a big plot of, I'll just say, Billingsley's removed all their grass, so that was a big remedy for the top 10. And everyone who's in the top have been notified. I do have concerns about leaks because we have such old pipes and there, you know, can be leaks that, like I said, most of those people did not know they had a leak. And really to speak to this, why didn't they care? Because their bill was still $80 or $85 and it didn't seem alarming because their bill wasn't high. So that is a part of the problem of not having water that really reflects your use. And my concern is, I mean, when you're looking at like these first ones, I mean, that nobody has any tiers of that really. I mean, for the most part, it's just a baseline fee for people. But I think, you know, I think the top ones are disappearing, and I feel really confident that when our numbers come out, a lot of those real high users are going to go away. When they redo our system, that's going to help with a lot of the leaks that are occurring. And, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, we've kind of been living in a little bit of a la-la land about our water and, you know, about how important it was to conserve. And, you know, now that our water levels are going down every month and we're not having any rain, I'm super happy to everybody for focusing on it. And I am happy to all these top users who are super receptive to me calling them and telling them that I think there was an issue and that there's a lot of people called for taking advantage of the conservation services and had the people at Las Vegas Valley Water District come out and check their system for leaks. I honestly feel like our next numbers are going to be really good. I think a lot of the outliers are going away and, you know, we're trending in the right direction. But honestly, for those people who have Teflon about the fact that they're using water, then we need to give them, like to Laura's point, some people just by their character are going to try to reduce. But if you haven't gotten the message yet and you still feel cavalier about your water use, then I think it's time to give them an economic motivation because all of the other motivations have been put to use so far.
Yeah.
Pauline, there's 47 in tier, I'm looking at the fifth scenario. There's 47 in tier five, there's 17 in tier four. So out of those 47,
well, I know for sure that four people had massive leaks, maybe more. Then there was, you know, like I said, Billingsley's were really high. They removed all their grass, okay. So I'm sure they're going
that's
really
not,
low.
That doesn't encourage me 4 out of 47 as much as it's encouraging you. I would like to see the fifth one with the tier five cost a lot more.
Yeah, well, totally.
It does. Bad.
So do your water bills, because I don't get a water bill, I'm a private well, do your water bills, they do show your water consumption as well as price. And do they show it relative to local use and stuff?
No. Only to your own use from the year prior. Yeah. But I think to your point, Laura, it is pretty, I mean, he does give a pretty big bang to the top user. I mean, they're going to be, their current bill would be 105 and their new bill would be 229. And I think that's
yeah, well, not until 2026, but it would, right, am I reading that correctly?
Right, 2026.
But it would be a $60 increase in the next year, which I do think is something you feel.
Well, then we actually even have to ask ourselves, you know, part of it is, do we want to have a phased system? I mean, in my personal thing, in 5 years, 4 years, we might not have water anymore. You know, I don't know why we have to slowly break people into the fact that, you know.
And I think that's what I was driving to before. It's like, are we tiering the system? You know, are we attempting to ease everyone in and not have an economic impact? Or in this case, because we are a rural community on our own wealth, the economic impact is a driver of the conservation, which is our goal. So I do think that in this case, let's have an impact in their bill so that we are continuing this conversation of conservation and not being so gentle about the increase.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that point. The crisis is now. You know, we had a few meetings ago, we had a thing where no new meters or no meters above a certain size, no increases in meter, and it's people objected to it, and I get it, except for if there's no water, there's no water. I mean, you can't like pretend there's water and just go use it all up, and I think your suggestion to skip all of the phasing might be the right way to go. Let's just put light in it for the people who are the really big users, make them feel the pain sooner. I mean, it's especially because they're such outliers of everybody else.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, people for the most part are there. You can see they cluster for sure. So I'm against the phasing, and myself, I'm for the more tiers and against the phasing. That's my personal opinion. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Tom McCauley, Ninth Castalia. We went through this. We lived in Eastland Heights, and we were on community wells, and then they metered us, and they started doing the tiering, but the tierings were set at 30,000, 45,000, and 60,000. That was set based on the average use of a homeowner in Las Vegas. That's what we were told. So based on these numbers, it seems like the village is doing a pretty good job, if that was true, what they were telling us. 30,000 was the first tier, 45 and 60.
The average water user, the residential water user, uses about 18,000 gallons of water. If you want to compare that to the average Las Vegas water districts and kind of residential customer, I think they use between 10 and 11,000 gallons per month. So water use in the gun is significantly higher on average than it is in Las Vegas.
You know what, but the mean is not. The average, right, but the mean is not. And that's because we have such big outliers that they pull our average way up. So at first blush, you're going to say we use so much more water than Las Vegas, but really, if all the outliers were out, if we look at where the mean use is, we're a little bit above Las Vegas. And I'm not defending Blue Diamond, but that's in part because we have bigger lots than a lot of people, you know, than they have in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, what do you mean geography-wise?
Just within the Las Vegas
Valley.
We had also talked about like funding for conservation, and like, is that not going to be like part of our bill, right? We're not going to, there once had been a mention like we would have to pay $50 a month to go into a conservation fund. No.
No, that it would just all be, you just have a normal water bill, and then part of that revenue would be segregated into a community conservation fund that would strictly be used for conservation programs.
Do all of these generate the same amount of money, or what's the difference between how much money they generate?
So scenarios, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, scenarios A through D, all generate fairly close to the same amount of revenue, and then scenario B with the
relatively the same, and it's that fifth tier that, you know, generates that extra revenue, and that was based on the request here. Now, having said that, with that fifth tier being 35,000 gallons, what's already been stated tonight, if a lot of these are leaks or they're addressing, you know, you may find that there's nobody in tier five, which based on conservation is very good. But if we banked our financial model on getting a lot of revenue from tier five and then suddenly people conserve, the problem is you don't get into, you know, time zero. You know, you may have to look at tiers one through four again. So again, it's just
are you basing a large income hit off of the tier five people? I mean, is that the prediction?
No, to his point, it's a little bit extra than the other scenarios. And so we've modeled it that way so that it isn't completely reliant on that 50 year. Because when you implement conservation, you know, it's a signal, which, as has been stated tonight, some people adhere to a signal and react, and others don't. And again, if you bank a model on all that revenue to your five, it's not good for you. Most people do, generally.
In your expertise and experience in doing tiered systems on the valley, is there one that generates more conservation? You know, are you seeing an effect of any one over another? Or are they all equally effective in getting people to conserve and pay attention?
For the Las Vegas Valley Water District, which to the question earlier, it's the city of Las Vegas and then the unincorporated parts of Clark County is what we're speaking of, which then excludes Henderson or Las Vegas, but in general, the rates are relatively similar. And I think if we even since 1996, the Las Vegas Valley Water District has had a four-tier system. Now, the rates have certainly gone up within each of those four tiers. We've had that consistently since 96. And what I can tell you from my experience is that the average user was around 18,000 gallons that has been set in Diamond. You know, let's say 10 or 15 years ago was 18,000. Now the average is down to 10 in Las Vegas. Now, there's a lot of factors, but is the tiered system part of that? Certainly. And so even going, you know, all of these scenarios, there's only one tier right now.
Yeah.
So regardless of how much you use, it's $1.55. So if any of these scenarios are selected, you know, it is going to send a conservation signal just by the mere fact that it is more than one tier. It's not a uniform rate.
Sorry, let me add to that. My name is Katie Horn. I'm also from Water District. And actually, I was just looking at the numbers for Kyle Canyon, which is a very different system than Blue Diamond, but similar in that they have a single source. And Jordan was more involved in the rate increase. They, previous to 2010, they did not have a tiered system. They only had a flat rate. So not the same source where you guys do pay per 1,000 gallon, but they paid 75, I don't remember even what the dollar amount was. And so, but they were using, and I apologize, I don't know what they were using for customer, but as a system, they were using about 350 acre feet per year. In comparison, you guys use about 100 or something. Since we implemented a tier system, they are now using about 170 acre feet per year. So we have not done anything else in that community. So the tiered system for them did send a conservation signal. However, I will note that Kyle Canyon's water rates are larger than ours. So for the state proposed, they have a lot of bigger system, a big more system needs, so it's just a little bit more there to talk to the complexity of it. So a little bit different, but I think that's probably another example.
Is the intention today to vote on one of these scenarios or just to get
We would love that. We would love a recommendation from the committee, yeah.
So I have a couple of comments. One, it concerns me deeply that one person in our community can get everybody else's water use data. I think that it troubles me that the water district would release that. Like, I could find out what Laura's water use is. Why is that?
I'm not sure. And I,
Sorry?
I don't think that's accurate.
Pauline knows everybody's water use.
And that was because at the time she was the chair of the commission, of the council. It wasn't, it's not something that's handed out to everybody.
So the chair of the council can get everybody's water use?
It was something we worked out as we were trying to work through this process.
Okay, well, I'm very much against that. I think that's an invasion of privacy.
Is it considered public information? Is it?
I will say that the water district publishes a list of the 10 top water users because it gets requested from us. So, I mean, in a certain way, it is public information what people, how much water people use.
So it's not protected. Okay. Right, well, I'm troubled by that. The next thing I would like to say is that I think that it's not right to say something like, we're not gonna have any water in 5 years. I think that that's Chicken Little, the sky is falling. I am very much in favor of water conservation. And let's be reasonable. Let's not jump in and say, no, we don't want to have a 5-year phase in because we want to shock people right now. Well, some people are out of work, you know. People, I don't want to see people's water bills increase by 60% in one month, from 1 month to the next. So I'm definitely in favor of phasing in. Let's work on this. I really like the idea of the tiers. I'm in favor of the one with the 5 so that we have the highest change for the people that are the heaviest users. But let's also be reasonable and not try to scare everybody.
I would have to say it's time to scare everybody. That would be my opinion. But yep. Well, can we phase it in and say in 1 year it's going to be this increase, it's going to be a phase in of 2 years, it's going to start a year, get it done faster, but with a warning? There's got to be some compromise between phasing it in and all at once. I think 5 years is way too long.
What about the phase in if it's the 5-tier thing, the phase in for the 5th tier gets accelerated so that the people who are the extreme water users are the ones who will feel the pain more quickly, let's say. Because when you look at it, people who are using so much more water than everybody else, I mean, you know, it's, just seems that like you end up with a situation where a handful of users are using an allocation that would serve a quite large amount of the town. So maybe those are the people that need to be, and it would only be for the 5th. Now all these increases, these are all larger increases, right? Like your first 5,000 gallon comes at one price, and then the next tier. The next price, et cetera, not the, it doesn't regress back to the early tier. Each tier has its own price.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that the people who are, regardless, and your point, I think, about being compassionate to people's income issues is, I think, well taken. But nonetheless, if, for instance, we don't even know, maybe a lot of these really high users haven't been discovered as having leaks yet, and they'll discover them more quickly if their phase in was more was accelerated. Like I say, and just for the 5th tier, don't punish them for the regular tiers that everyone else has. It's just the extreme ones. Maybe they need to be made aware of it. By the way, you know, you said you'd like to have a recommendation from the council here, but it's like I wonder whether this, you know, needs more input from people in town. I mean, before we give a recommendation, I don't know.
I mean, first I would respond and jump in also, but I think phasing in one tier and leaving the others not phased in, that becomes incredibly complex as far as just the mechanics of it, from to the messaging, and if you get into, you know, you're treating different customers differently. One of the main goals is to establish a fair and equitable rate for everyone. I forget what was the second thing you said. Oh, and again, we've been soliciting input from the community since April. We've done our best to send out postcards about the workshops that we had. I know the packet we posted, we posted publicly. We also put on the community Facebook page. So, I mean, we we've been doing pretty hard work.
Maybe this is something that needs to be put on an agenda so people see it posted.
It was on the agenda.
It's on the agenda, and they've reached out and done three.
Does anybody else in the audience that hasn't already voiced their opinion want to voice their opinion on this?
Plus two more meetings. So in order to
feel like we've had enough time for conversations, and I would like to make a motion, and we'll see whether it goes through. Well, no, well, there's plenty of discussion that can be had after the motion is made, but I'm going to go ahead and make a motion.
Okay.
My motion is that we vote to recommend the scenario five proposal. Okay, further discussion.
Well, and then with regards to phasing, and yes, I think we should do tier five. I mean, I of course have a tremendous amount of compassion for people that aren't working, but I think we really need to look at what that means. So like a low water user, their bill was going to go up $10. A medium user, their bill is going to go up $22. A high user is going to go up about $40, and the highest users are going to go up $130. So I just don't think anybody needs to phase into a $10 increase, a $20 increase, or even a $40 increase. You don't need 5 years to work yourself up to 10 extra dollars.
Well, let me back up. If you did it all in 1 year, your impact is going to be significantly more. So
your impact is going to be
more. So you're not going from, I'm going to go really good. So I'm going to look at scenario. Your $25 bill is
Well, the percentages are 42, 53, and 72 for those three scenarios.
The question, and I just want to make sure I understand the question, because I just want to give a little bit of background. So when someone was talking earlier about, you know, the person who's cavalier maybe and just uses a lot, as I look at scenario E, which I think we're talking about scenario E. Yeah, no problem. The high water user, you know, the bottom one, the 60,000, is at 105, right? Rounded 106. They're immediately jumping to 163. So roughly a $60 bill, you know, in January, assuming they use that amount in December, and they use that same amount in January, they have an immediate $60, which is, you know, based on $160, is a 60% increase, just like that. And so, you know, but to your point, if you were going to jump all the way to 229, which is all the way on the right, 2026, is that what you're talking about, $100 jump?
Right. Whereas, like, for the lowest user, am I right in saying that if we went immediately to it, their bill would go up $10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the goal. One of the goals is to keep that bill from going up very high, because those are the people who are just the indoor water users.
Yeah, Jordan said it before. What we've heard on, you know, fire citizens committees is, you know, monthly bills are monthly bills. And the model over 10 years needs a certain amount of revenue. So instead of jumping up all at once in year one and then kind of level for the other 9 years, let's just kind of take, you know, gradual approach. That's the way the model was done, similar to how we've done it in the past. If you want to spike up right away, you know, we have to look at, you know, the bill will probably be a little bit different than what's shown here. What I mean by that,
because are you saying because the prior years have generated revenue that's getting calculated into the new bill? I'm just trying to understand the mechanics.
That $25 bill for the low water user and $105, if you went up to $35 and $229 right away, we would be collecting extra revenue in those 4 years of the phase-in compared to what the model shows, right? If you jump up right away, you're going to collect extra amount of revenue.
Right.
And so, you know, from the State Board of Finance and Water Projects that Katie's speaking of, that because they're part of the grant, they need us to go to, you know, a tiered rate system and all that, you know, that would be beneficial to get more revenue right away. But that's not how the model was designed. It was designed to go up gradually so that, you know, we don't collect that, you know, right away and have to give people a 60% increase from 1 month to the next, because that's just right into the past.
It's only 60% for the top marginal rate, not for the entire bill.
No, but it's 40%.
This is the entire bill.
Oh, I see.
Sorry, if that wasn't clear. This is the water bill impact. So it is the total bill.
Okay.
And even to the lower user, you know, it's roughly 10% in that first year. $25 to $27. A couple dollars is Yeah, you guys are arguing, just point out.
I think that, you know, coming from the standpoint of conservation, I think what we want to do is strike the balance of encouraging people to conserve without causing an uproar or even an anti-conservationist impact. And if I'm hearing the Water District experts correctly, any tiered system is very effective in conservation. So my opinion is I agree with scenario E, and if the phase system is built that way and equally effective in terms of igniting conservation, then that's what I would support.
We collect the extra $10 right now.
Did you have a comment?
Oh, that's correct. Again, simply by moving from essentially a flat rate to a tier structure, that's going to have a significant conservation impact in and of itself. And then jumping to this scenario B where there's five tiers.
What's the water department like? What do you guys like of these scenarios?
As I mentioned, all of these, we're good with all of these. They all meet the financial obligations of the Blue Diamond Water System, which is the old equivalent.
Bob. Okay, Bob has something to say.
George, once it leaves here, will it be going to the next meeting?
Yes.
The Las Vegas Valley Water District meeting? And
if you already got a recommendation this evening, we would immediately begin the business impact statement process, which is when we notify local businesses and trades of the rate increase. And then they have a 15 business day window to let us know if these rates would have a negative impact on them doing business. Okay? And then at the next Water District Board of Directors meeting, they would consider the business impact statement and they would set a rate hearing for their next meeting, which would be a month later.
Okay. So basically what I'm getting at, and it's been mentioned that there was three meetings, two live, one via Zoom.
Yeah, we did.
And we had this meeting here tonight. So if whatever is decided tonight is somebody disagrees with, then they still have the option to discuss it at one of those meetings.
They certainly do. I mean, when the district board of directors meets to discuss a rate change, those are public hearings where people can show up and express their being in favor or against or,
So I think I'm ready to close discussion from the floor, but whatever discussion needs to continue from up here, let's wrap that up.
Well, my only real question is, so what I got from a minute ago, these are the different three scenarios are revenue neutral for you guys?
Essentially, yes. Yep.
So Barbara, before we go any further, you made the motion for scenario E, including the 5-4-year phase.
Exactly, yeah, as proposed by the Water District.
Just want to make sure.
I would say, instead of phase-in, I'd say as proposed by the Water District. Fine.
I agree that, you know, or let me say this, I'm comforted by the fact that just the fact that you put in a tiered system causes change, so I'm willing to go along with the phased approach and the E scenario.
Awesome. Call for a vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Why a request? Office
closed.
I live in the corner of Cerrito where popular meats Allegro and Good luck. I've been 22 years and I have seen too many near collisions with cars and children and cars and dogs and cars and bicycles and cars and cats and snakes. And
okay, it's getting late.
Can you ask for Nevada Water Trust to just be boring and slow? There's so many of them here at once and I'm out there, please slow down, We have only crop of clappers. It's scary right there.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you, visitors.
Thank you, guys.
So we still have one other big item. Receive input on the draft area-specific policies and consolidated land use categories as a part of Transform Clark County. And I do have one comment that I need to read from, again, from Mary Hager.
Do you want to read it, or can I just submit it to Plan?
I think I told her I would. I would told her that I would. I would read it.
Okay.
So, as soon as I find
what
it.
What I'm going to do is write down or get it to you and then submit it. So.
Where is it?
So for anybody who wasn't here, I'll do a real quick recap. The county is working on rewriting our master plan that hasn't been done in over 20 years. We are looking for input regarding the policies and the land use categories. The master plan is the big overarching plan. We will also be looking at Title 30, which is the development code, which is the nitty-gritty rules of setbacks and heights and colors and all those things. The packet I handed out to you has a lot of information in it. I did give you guys a new chart, new and improved chart that includes the zoning for the different categories. One thing that came up last time, and it's been coming up ever since, is that the rural, residential rural and residential agricultural agriculture categories are proposed to be combined into one category, which would allow up to 1 acre lots, or down to 1 acre lots, whatever you call it. Right now, where 2 acres is the minimum, it would allow 1 acre as the minimum. That has been brought to planning's attention multiple times. I will be including it on the comments that come from Red Rock because I send in a list from each community. So I've already sent it in for Sandy Valley. I'll be sending it in for all the rural communities where that has been brought up. And they've been made very aware of the concerns on that, as has the commissioner.
So the suggestion then would be to just not combine the RU or RR and RA and kind of get rid of the new ON and just leave it.
That's one suggestion. I don't know how they're going to go about it. But yeah, that's the simplest suggestion.
Simplest,
just leave
yes.
it alone.
Yeah,
leave
those two categories. Yeah.
Leave it alone. So yeah, how they end up doing it, I don't know. But that's one suggestion. So on the land use categories, the rest, other parts of the valley have different concerns, but I know that's the big concern out here. So I'm not going to go through policy by policy like we did before because that was a nightmare. and I don't think it was necessarily productive because you guys have such a broad area. So if you have input you want to give me tonight, I'm happy to take it. If you have further input, I would really suggest going on the website and you can type out a novel of input. What I'm going to do tonight is I'll write it down in notes and send it along. So it's probably better and more detailed for you to put your own input on the computer, but I'm happy to take your input if you want to give it to you.
So can I just say something procedural
first? Yeah.
I submitted a bunch of comments on, and I got nothing back as confirmation that it was received.
Okay. I haven't done it that way, so I don't
know. Yeah. And I emailed it to you also,
okay.
So could you please
check.
Just use mine that I sent you?
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Well, first I'll make sure I will talk to the consultants and see, make sure your stuff went in.
Well, I don't mind them hearing it twice.
And you know, the first time I tried, my email was rejected.
Oh.
So then I kept going back, and I capitalized, not capitalized, and finally, you know, that was at first, you know.
Yes. Did you get a confirmation that you're?
No, I didn't. But I haven't had the computer back on, so let
okay.
me know.
So that may not be something we built in the system. That's frustrating to me too. I like to know that it was received. So that's good feedback as we go through the process, that's something they should build into the process.
Okay, here comes Pauline's feedback.
So on the policy Northwest 1.7, that state Senate bill number 358 doesn't exist anymore.
I just got, somebody just texted me that this left.
What?
That
was, you know what that was. That was the Dina Titus bill that got, you know, repealed.
Oh, are we not talking about the dark space? Sorry.
I'm talking about policy
1.7. Right, and I still, yeah. Okay, so that's a no. Sorry, I was...
I love all the rest of it.
Okay. Sure.
Which is embrace the goals of the Southern Nevada Economic Development and Conservation Act.
Embrace the goals.
For your information, which you don't need to write all this stuff because they know what they are. Prioritize the use of federal land for conservation, recreation, and other public purposes. Encourage affordable housing development. Allow the economy to grow while protecting natural resources. Combat climate change. Promote tribal self governance.
Okay, so can you say your first, embrace the goals of?
The SNEDCA.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Anything else specific you want to share with me tonight? And sorry, when you said the bill, I just got a text earlier from somebody that Sisolak was signing the night sky protection. That was going through the legislature. So I will bring details on that back to you if you're not aware of that. It's a program through the state that allows communities to apply to be part of dark skies areas. And it was just to create the program. So the program doesn't exist yet. So we'll watch as the program gets created, and then I'll bring that back to you guys to see if that's something you're interested in, which I have a feeling it will be. But, yeah, and that's, so when you said Bill, I was like, oh, yeah, I just got signed. Well, that's the one that got signed.
Here's Mary Hager's comment on Transport Nevada. She says, it's one sentence, it's two sentences. I'm totally against the updated master plan / land use. I believe it's simply a way to increase housing density in our rural areas.
And I concur with that.
Yeah.
By the way, do you know anything if this stuff is going to override the Red Rock overlay?
Red Rock overlay is part of the zoning code. This is, like we talked about, these are not rules or laws. These are just ideas of how we feel about the community and the future of the community. From what I've heard, the Red Rock overlay will continue into the new code. As far as actual implementation, I don't know. That's the next step.
So I'm concerned that, and this really fits with the comment that Barbara just read, I'm concerned that, that these multiple splits where, you know, a bunch of things where it was once our view, if I'm putting it the right way, combining those, what it does is it makes conforming uses that increase density inherently, and nobody's going to turn down a conforming zone change or conforming use. So it's just inherently, I think, a ruin the rural character of these rural places.
Right, and I hear you. I would just point out that chart, it's affecting all zoning categories, so it was not specifically meant to harm the rural areas. I know it's reading that way, but if you look, they combined a bunch. But absolutely, those comments have been made. I have told the commissioner myself, because you guys know I live in a rural area where we have 2-acre minimum lots. I don't want that to change. I actually just typed up the comments from Sandy Valley and sent them this afternoon. And listed all the reasons why it's a bad idea, environmentally, sustainability-wise, the viability of the community, water, all those things. So I hear you 100%. And I don't mean to diminish your comment, but they're changing all of them. They're trying to combine all of them. I think when it comes to zoning, they think simpler is better, and so that's their intent. I truly don't believe their intent was to increase density. I think they're trying to simplify things, and that's an unintended consequence that they're hearing about.
Well,
so,
unfortunately, though, if it goes through, the unintended consequence will become the new normal.
100%.
You know,
I agree.
You know, I think a couple of meetings or two ago, there was somebody, you were bringing up that some of the people in the north edge of town where there's horse properties, and then people are, they're building developments next to horse properties, and the people who moved in were complaining that they have to smell the horse.
Uh-huh.
And so once you start splitting the RU, you know, the 2 acre minimums, and now people, just this gentleman tonight, with his, you know, wanting to get rid of the H2 or whatever that was, you know, wanting to make it all be RU, and the issues that are occurring for that kind of thing. That's another thing that we'll see, is that as the density increases, more and more of the rural character, including the ability to keep animals, et cetera, goes away. And I think we have to be careful to safeguard these rare communities, because the fact is, there's tons of high density stuff in town. You want that stuff, you can get it all day long, but there's really only, even though it may seem like a lot of land, there's only a very few properties. You know, look at Calico Basin, what are there, 35 privately owned parcels roughly in Calico Basin? You know, that's not a lot.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden we get to split those up and have 80 private parcels, you know, or something. It's,
right.
It just changes the character.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And all of my communities are given the same input. And that's part of the reason the commissioner and I pushed to make sure we went out to each community to get this exact input.
So, Megan, is there anything that we should do from now to now, given that many of us have the same concern? We know it's on record now, but is there an opportunity in the public comment period where we could campaign to make that a little bit more of a...
This is the public comment period to get the input for crafting it.
Uh-huh.
I will keep everybody updated and you can look on the website too as to the process. It will come before the board. I have a feeling there's gonna be a lot of changes based on this input. We haven't done this process before, so I don't know exactly what the next step is, but I will be keeping you all informed.
Yeah.
And if we need to fight, we'll fight. Yeah, please do. And they really do read all the comments.
It's helpful to have more of those comments on record at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
To Michelle's point, I mean, you know, there's, we'll just say, you know, such a small amount of people that live in rurals, and 10% of them put in an email compared to the whole mass of people in Las Vegas. It'll seem like, you know, 10 comments, but it's really like 10% of
Well, yes and no. You have a specific section of the code, so your comments aren't being compared to everybody else. Your comments are being compared to you, or to my six towns, and Moapa Valley and Searchlight. You know, so you're not being thrown into the pool with everybody else. You have a separate section. I don't think so. They have heard us for sure. If they've heard it, hearing it 100 times isn't going to make them hear it more. It's, you know, so.
I'm not sure I agree with that, right? I mean, sometimes, like Black Lives Matter, right? How do you get attention? You get everybody out on the
street. Right, and I understand that, but we're not dealing with an election. We're dealing with consultants that are saying, oh, I've heard this from this community, this community, this community. They're putting thought into it. It's not just a vote, you know, so.
I think we should pull out the big guns.
I agree. I agree.
We have put it on record from a few months ago. We should wait to see if the next stages, and if not, potentially form a coalition again.
And a lot of times, I don't have a personal dog in the fight. I have a personal dog in this fight.
I think we're overly cautious based on things that have happened in the past. You know, politicians promise something and the opposite occurs. What are you going to do?
But if they didn't care, I wouldn't be here talking about this. 3 month meetings in a row and participating in phone calls in the evenings when I could be eating dinner with my husband. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We are, this is a 3-year process, and if they wanted to just jam it through, they would have done that. They are.
Encourage the input, so thank you.
Good.
Got one here. Policy NW 5.2, geological public space access. Connect new development to existing and plant trails for open space. Discourage maintaining streets that abut or connect with existing and plant trails for open space. My question is, I think, Evan, you were probably at this meeting, and it was probably 5 years ago, there was some guy named Bob on a horse or something. And I thought they were vacating the street, and they were saying, well, the horses used to be there. And plus, by me,
is the meaning of an existing? I know what a plant trail is, like when we realize there'd be a plant trail. But by me, by the end of our street, there's a trail that goes up the mountain and goes all over the place. Is that an existing trail, even though it was illegally?
I would say in this regard, about this plan, it would be actual documented trails, not okay. Just where someone's been riding for years.
Okay, because I would love to see documented in there as opposed to, you know, we could all argue about existing, you know, what is an existing trail and stuff. And I'm sure up in Calico there are quite a few of them I remember parking by Don Ginter's house when he was up there and taking the trails, and there was a bunch of them that went in all directions.
Another thing to consider is that a lot of these trails have, for one reason or another, like including vacation of rights of way and things like that, have gone away, which is another problem. Traditional uses are being curtailed by this stuff. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Oh, good, thank you.
So the last item on the agenda is
this may have been asked before, and I'm sorry if the question has. Is there a way to prevent the trucks from using engine brakes as they come?
No. I have looked into that. Engine braking is a safety mechanism, so NDOT will not reduce it, and some newer trucks, they cannot not use it. It's yeah, and that's part of the reason you see less and less of those signs, because they don't want to limit the safety that is needed for those, and some trucks can't even not do it.
All right, I was 5:30 in the morning.